What we're going to do is we're going to start off now with a clip from the Washington Post and with what is in the Mueller report.
Attorney General William P. Barr released the redacted Mueller report on April 18th and announced his key takeaways. First, he said neither Trump nor the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to try to influence the 2016 election. And his office concluded, none of Trump's actions rose to the level of obstruction of justice. However, at the time of Barr's speech, the 400-page report remained to be seen. Here is what's in it. While the Mueller team did not find evidence of criminal conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia, the report does reveal some previously unknown tidbits of information about the summer and fall of 2016. First, the report says the Trump campaign expected to benefit from Russia's interference activities. And it states definitively for the first time that Trump said this,
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
Just hours before Russia attacked the Clinton campaign's email system. The report also reveals that Trump asked people affiliated with his campaign to acquire those potentially damaging emails. On the question of obstruction of justice, what Barr said in his morning news conference is only part of what the report reveals. Mueller struggled with both the legal implications of investigating the president for obstruction and the motives behind a range of his most alarming actions. Mueller's team notably said it couldn't confidently say the president did not commit obstruction of justice. And the report reveals that the president didn't fully answer at least 30 questions from Mueller's team.
I was asked a series of questions. I've answered them very easily.
Saying he did not recall or remember or have independent recollection of information. The report also reveals that in May 2017, Trump quote-unquote lambasted former Attorney General Jeff Sessions for failing to protect him and recusing himself from the investigation. And according to the report, when he found out an independent counsel had been appointed, he cursed and said, "This is the end of my presidency." Barr says he will allow Congress to request less redacted versions of the report, and that might become a reality. Just minutes after the redacted report dropped, some Democratic lawmakers were unsatisfied.
All righty, there you have it. And some of the key findings, according to the Washington Post, of the Mueller report includes Mueller rejecting the argument that Trump is shielded from obstruction laws, that Trump, when told of appointment of the special counsel, said, "This is the end of my presidency," and that's a quote. Also, substantial evidence supports Comey over Trump in the account of the Flynn meeting, that the Trump campaign attempted to obtain Hillary Clinton's private emails, that the campaign expected to benefit from stolen information released by the Russians, that the Mueller probe spawned 14 other investigations, including two unidentified cases that remain ongoing, and that Putin stepped up outreach to Trump after the 2016 election. And the special counsel team concluded Trump intended to obstruct the probe in tweeting support for Manafort. And also, Mueller appears by a lot of, there's a lot of speculation on this, appears to kick obstruction, the obstruction question to Congress. He did outline 10 instances of obstruction, or what could be seen as possible obstruction, including the pressure on Comey to end the probe of Michael Flynn, of Trump's reaction to the continuing Russia investigation, the firing of Comey and the aftermath of that, the appointment of special counsel and efforts to remove, Trump was trying to remove the special counsel, and also to curtail the special counsel's investigation and to prevent public disclosure of evidence, and also making efforts to have the former Attorney General Jeff Sessions to take control of the investigation. You might recall Sessions had recused himself, and that Trump actually ordered the White House counsel to deny that he, Trump, had tried to fire Mueller, and that Trump's actions towards Flynn, Manafort, and other possible witnesses, and his actions toward Michael Cohen. So there's just a lot there, and Laura Carlson, we'll start with you. What jumped out at you, and what are your thoughts now in the aftermath, including the response, particularly from Democrats on the Hill? Laura Carlson.
I think the first thing that's obvious is that he was not exonerated. And so it's a far cry from the summary that we were given and all the crowing that went on in that space that was allowed between the summary, a misleading summary by Barr, and the full report that's been, well, the full redacted report, because that's an important part of it too, that's been released now. You know, Mueller was in, and he describes himself, in a difficult situation, a kind of a legal catch-22, because a sitting president can't be indicted. So what he said is, you know, a prosecutor's judgment that crimes were committed when charges can't be brought, and this is almost verbatim, you know, affords no adversarial opportunity for public name clearing before an impartial adjudicator, and therefore he felt it was not his role to bring those charges. But clearly he felt that there were charges, especially in the obstruction of justice volume of the report. But also, we have to remember that it doesn't say there was no collusion. What it says is that there's no evidence of conspiracy or coordination, or there isn't overwhelming evidence that would be that would initiate charges, which is a little different, because there's certainly quite a bit of evidence that there were attempts, or like you said, there were, they intended to try to use the Russians to influence the investigation. And I think that's another interesting part of it, that Trump was very fortunate in this case to have around him people who refused to follow his own orders. And that takes us back to Michael Wolff's book about the Fire and the Fury, about the rebellions in the White House. And there were actually some quotes in the report where, you know, Darren McGrun said, hello, the president is asking me to do some crazy stuff. He didn't say stuff, you know, and I can't do it. And there were a number of cases like that, and they were in part what eventually saved him from a formal charge on this. You know, there's still a lot to be found out. We are back to this no smoking gun situation. I think that based on this report, as we said last time, impeachment would be a waste of effort, and this is what Steny Hoyer has said in the House. Tactically, this is the conclusion that it seems the Democratic leadership has arrived at, and it seems to be a very reasonable conclusion. 18 months out from the election, what really has to be looked at carefully here is not the legalisms of what the charges were or were not, but the ethics of the whole thing. What we're clearly seeing is a president who made desperate efforts to try to suppress an investigation, who was very afraid of something, of a lot of things probably, within this report and this investigation, and said so clearly, and now it's on record, and who feels that he's above the law in many ways. That's really the takeaway as we go into the election period. I think it will be important for Congress to follow up on many of these points. That's been presented now clearly as its mandate. And in legal and historical terms, it's something that it has to do. In tactical terms, I don't think the Democratic Party is going to want to spend a lot of time and effort on the particularities of the report, except to indicate that we have a president who's acting in an authoritarian way, who's tried to protect himself from something, and that comes out very clearly.
Yeah, and Jackie Goldberg, also what jumps out at you, but also the reaction from the Democratic Party, because there is a split now in the Democratic Party. I mean, what Mueller, while mentioning that the president has a quote constitutional duty to faithfully execute the laws, Mueller also said, quote, the separation of powers doctrine authorizes Congress to protect official proceedings, including those of courts and grand juries, from corrupt, obstructive acts regardless of their source. So whether or not to use Mueller's damning, and I think it was a damning report, particularly, but not only, frankly, on obstruction to impeach Trump. I mean, it's a political decision. So there's this big debate of will the Democrats make a political decision given the 2020 election that's coming up, or will they do basically what many are saying their job is, that given what's in the Mueller report, he lays out a case of obstruction and indicates that it is up to Congress to make that case or not. So Jackie Goldberg, what jumps out at you and also on this whole issue of the Democrats and impeachment or not?
Well, I think the thing that I haven't had time to read all of it yet, I guess many people haven't, but everything that I read always ends up with words like, and they lied about this, and they lied about this, and Sanders made it up when she said that the rank and file in the FBI didn't like Comey. She just lied about it. She made it up. And I think I'm overwhelmed by the number of times in the first part of the report that the report states that here are the documents down at the bottom with the emails and the phone calls and so forth, and it states down at the bottom of it many times over and over and over and over again, somehow, oh my goodness, they lied again. They lied and they lied and they lied. I think part of the problem for the Comey report was that there were so many conflicting liars willing to lie for this president that it was very difficult to be sure what was going on, because then he would find their emails, he would find their phone calls, he would find statements from other people about him. And I think that's the thing that most overwhelmed me as I was reading this, was the number of times he used the word, and then they lied, and then this one lied, and then that one lied. So that's kind of a worrisome, when you know that virtually there are a huge number of folks willing to lie for this man. That was the first number one thing for me. I think the next thing that jumped out at me was the dilemma that Laura just talked about. If you can't prosecute him, they said in the conclusion of the summary of Part 2, then we can't really make accusations, because if you make accusations, he can't defend himself without being able to go to court. And so, but I think the line that the most important line in the thing is in that conclusion, which is based on the facts and applicable legal standards, we're unable to reach that judgment. Accordingly, while this report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. And I think that's what he's saying. He's saying, because of the Department of Justice's standing rule that you can't indict a sitting president, Congress, do your job. And he lays it out, man. He lays it out in 10 points. He gives them all the information they need, the legal framework for it he starts with. And I think, basically, the question that Congress has is not whether or not to be political. The question that Congress has is to continue to investigate. If they take apart the pieces that this report says, and they now have all kinds of documents that they did not have before, all of these phone calls, all of these interviews, all of these statements. I heard one pundit last night, and I think he was correct. He said, he quoted Churchill, who said that this is not the end, this is not the beginning, this is the end of the beginning. And that's what this really is. This report says that we have in the White House a person who does not believe that they need to tell the truth, that he can order people to lie for him, that he can hold them accountable if they don't lie for him. We have a person in the White House who does not believe that he is restricted by any of the checks and balances of Congress. I believe that there should be many more hearings, which are already planned by the Democrats, and I do believe that there should be an impeachment hearing, at least, which brings these charges. Whether or not they want to make that central to what they're doing, I don't think so. I think the most important thing to do is to keep playing those reports of which, I mean, I watched a couple of reports of people in Republicans in Congress who, when we were talking about Clinton being impeached, used language about much smaller items that said, of course we have to impeach him. You don't have to say that you're lying. You just have to lie. Well, we've got all the evidence of lies here. There's plenty of stuff here that needs to be done. But I will say to you, as a former government teacher for many years, if Congress does not hold the president accountable, if Congress does not hold the president accountable, and its only way to do that is impeachment, if it does not hold it accountable, we have no checks and balances in America. And no checks and balances means that you really can, honest to God, end up with something very close to a dictatorship.
Yeah, and Dr. Gerald Horn, I mean, picking up on Jackie's point, one, we do want to know what jumped out at you, but on this point about what to do next, because it does seem that the Democrats are in a bit of a pickle. I mean, you have somebody like OAC already signing on, supporting Steyer, the millionaire, billionaire who's been calling for Trump's impeachment for quite a long time now, and we'll see how other progressive, in quotes, Democrats react to that. I mean, even Bernie Sanders isn't mentioning the I word now. Certainly Congresswoman Maxine Waters had been going on about it prior to the release of the report. I haven't seen a particular statement from her since. But the reality is, I mean, Jackie's point about if Trump is not held accountable, it seems as though the whole thing seems to be a bit of a joke. And could you imagine if a Democratic president were in office, let's say Obama was in office, and you had all of this evidence of obstruction against him, what would the Republicans do? Would they impeach or would they not impeach? So the other part of that I wanted to say is that something to be considered is the Democratic base. You know, last time, a lot of reasons could be given to why the Democrats lost the election, Russian interference, voter suppression, etc., all of which are true. At the end of the day, also, a lot of folks just did not turn out to vote. A lot of Democrats did not turn out to vote because they were not inspired to vote. So are they now going to be inspired to vote if it looks as though the Democrats are just letting Trump slide and instead making a decision that if they don't impeach, that they stand a better chance of getting rid of Trump in 2020. Dr. Horn, I'm wondering what you think about all this.
Well, I'm afraid to say that the United States of America is now reaping the bitter harvest of 250 years of white supremacy and a century of anti-communism. About 1917 or thereabouts, the United States began this concerted campaign to oust communists from power in Moscow, succeeding in 1991, leading to the left not controlling the commanding heights of the economy and turning it over to oligarchs. As an adjunct to that policy, the left in the United States was seen as all too close to Moscow, and they were weakened considerably. And now we have the spectacle of the U.S. president being accused of being in bed with Moscow, with that prehistory that I just mentioned generally being ignored, and the 63 million strong Trump base basically standing with their man, not least because the preceding epic meant a weakening of left-wing trade unions, meaning a weakening of labor education, which has left them vulnerable ideologically, which leads them to stand by their man. Secondly, the Mueller report is very detailed about Russia. It mentions only in passing that George Papadopoulos, who was convicted, he, of course, was a Trump comrade, is suspected of actually being closer to Israel than to Moscow. And that raises the other question, which is that because U.S. imperialism plays such a major role in every nation on the planet, and because it has such weak campaign finance laws, many countries are interfering in the internal affairs of the United States of America. Look up Thomas Barrack, the Arab-American billionaire and close comrade of Mr. Trump, who reputedly and reportedly has been a conduit for Saudi influence into the United States and the influence of the United Arab Emirates. Congresswoman Maxine Waters is subpoenaing the documents of Deutsche Bank of Germany, a major financier of Mr. Trump, and those documents may reveal why Mr. Trump has been so harsh towards Chancellor Merkel in Berlin, perhaps seeking leverage in his dealings with Deutsche Bank. with regard to Mr. Mueller's contention that he could not indict because of this Office of Legal Counsel finding in the Justice Department that a sitting president cannot be indicted, I think that if you look at that opinion, it rests upon a weak legal basis, and I was surprised that Mr. Mueller did not challenge that. It may be one more example of how he blinked at the end of the day. In any case, I think we should also await the Inspector General's report, that is to say the Inspector General of the Justice Department, Michael Horowitz, who's investigating the investigators. As a historian, I would like to put both reports, Mueller and Horowitz, side by side before I come to definitive conclusions. And in any case, it's on one of the key issues, that is to say the Ukraine, and Paul Manafort, the Trump campaign chair, now in jail and defrocked, supposedly being a conduit for pro-Moscow influence in the Ukraine. What's striking is that the Democrats, as has been their habit of late, are running to the right of Trump on many key foreign policy issues. You see this with regard to North Korea, and you also see this with regard to the Ukraine. Mr. Manafort was trying to push the Ukraine in a center-right direction, sympathetic to Moscow. The Democrats, and now Mr. Trump, who has capitulated to their policy, is pushing neo-fascism in the Ukraine. There are so many issues involved in this report and in this present crisis, but sadly enough, I'm not sure if the country as a whole, not to mention its pundit class, has the ideological chops to deal with it.
Right, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are now in terms of moving forward, because the general thought is that the only way to really see the evidence in the report, because we've seen how Trump and his team, in fact, his outside lawyers actually saw the report even before members of Congress, even before members of the Intelligence Committee. I mean, that itself says something. So they had time to look at the report and get their reaction together and likely help to shape that Barr's comments that we'll go to next, Barr's rollout. But some are saying that the only way to really get those documents is to start at least some kind of impeachment hearing. If not, the parties that be could just say no. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this position the Democrats are in now about a political decision, allegedly, of not to impeach, right? Or I also think it's a political decision to impeach. So one way or the other. Dr. Horn, any thoughts on that?
Well, I do think that the Democrats holding majority of the House can get an impeachment resolution through the House. The problem is that it would die upon arrival in the Senate because the Senate, or that is to say the Trump base, would not allow the Republican-dominated Senate to remove their man. Certainly, I think that Chairman Nadler of the House Judiciary Committee needs to hold far-reaching hearings. He needs, obviously, to bring Mr. Mueller himself before that body. And at least the continued digging may reveal and expose more secrets that then the progressive movement can use to its advantage.
Yeah, and just one other thought on this, Jackie Goldberg. Dr. Horn is absolutely right because the votes are not in the Senate. Speaker Pelosi has said that any impeachment proceedings, she would want to be bipartisan. It does seem, though, that perhaps more information can come out to the public, including getting documents that Congress does not now have, further evidence in an impeachment hearing than not doing an impeachment hearing. Any quick further thoughts on this before we go to station break?
What I said when I quoted Churchill about this being the end of the beginning, I mean that just sincerely. As hearings get held, both in the two major committees, you're going to find that more and more information is going to be public. You're going to hear from Mueller himself. You're going to hear about why he keeps listing each section in the second part of the report as evidence. He calls it evidence. He doesn't call it information. He calls it evidence.
Right.
He calls it first, and then he has an analysis that calls that this is an obstructive act because, okay, They have written a plan that says here's what you can do if you want to pursue obstruction of justice. You have Graham, who said about Clinton that you don't have to actually do anything wrong. You have to just have the intent, and we know by what he said that his intent was a cover-up. Well, if he used the same standard, he would be in charge of calling for impeachment for this president. So what we have is a failure of the Republican Party to act on behalf of the American people. And that will only become clear as more and more evidence is brought forth. So I think those hearings should be public. They should be televised. They should tell people everything. They should bring in all the witnesses. I was impressed with this report, even with redactions, by the amount of documentation. I'm just looking at page 140 of the second one. It already is up to 968 footnotes. This report details what they did, and it tells you how they know they did it. So this is not a document that says, oh, President, you did nothing wrong. We couldn't really find anything wrong. It says we found unbelievable amounts wrong in this chapter 2 of this report, and we can document it, and we can tell you, here is what the evidence is. Here is our analysis of why this is a obstruction of justice. And I believe that the Democrats have a responsibility, whether they can get the impeachment finalized or not, to bring forth this information. If they don't want to do it through impeachment, they must do it through hearings, through bringing in witnesses, by having Mueller testify both publicly and then publicly and privately in some of the committees where there's issues of national security. But this cannot just stop here, or otherwise we've told the President of the United States that he is above the law. He does not have to worry about being held responsible for his actions, that he can tell his people to lie, that they can continue lying to us. I mean, if anybody believes anything that Sanders ever says again, they would be, they should be indicted themselves for some crime. I mean, there's so many places in this report that talk about what she lies. She just makes stuff up at the table. You know, we have a situation where the government is out of control. And if the Democrats refuse to take that on, and I don't believe they will, I think they will take it on in the most responsible way, which is through these committees they chair in the House. That will decide whether or not there's impeachment.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that, Jackie Goldberg. And some breaking news here. The U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee Chair Jerry Nadler has officially now issued a subpoena to the Department of Justice to hand over the full report. So we'll see what happens with that. And I assume that means unredacted report.